What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another podcast. This is The Real Rundown. I'm here with Pedro. I'm here with Scott. What's up, guys?
Hello, everyone.
Hello there.
Good to be back.
Good to be back. Today, we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff. We're going to be a little disorganized just because we watched so many films, documentaries, and shows last minute, but we'll get through it all. To start with, we're just going to do a quick roundtable. I didn't get through a whole lot of stuff other than the three main shows we're going to talk about, but I did rewatch Dune for the third time on HBO, and it just sort of...
Damn, three times?
I watched it three times, yeah.
Have you seen it?
I didn't watch it three times since we last spoke. I just mean since it's been out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I saw it once.
Yeah, I think it's... I do think it's like a modern science fiction masterpiece. It's just the music, the set design, the story. So it's all really good. I kind of forgot about it, but I saw the thumbnail on HBO Max, and I was like, all right, let me just watch this. I started watching it while I was cooking because I like to throw something on the screen. And then I watched about half of it. And then later that evening, I watched the rest of it. And then I went back and watched the trailer for the new one that's coming out. The second half of the book does get a little weird, so I'm curious how they're gonna incorporate that into the movie. But yeah, it's really, really good. What about you guys?
I watched going to TV shows. I found myself watching Suits because it just became available on Netflix.
Suits. Oh, you know what? They have like that very provocative thumbnail, right?
They do, but that's not why I started watching. Well, I did not originally see that provocative image, but thank you for implying that I was watching it because of it. But no, that was not the initial thumbnail that came up until you started watching it.
Because I was like, is Netflix doing a softcore porn now? Is this the new Skinemax?
It depends on what category you're looking at, because there is quite a bit of, show kind of that you could probably put in that category. But I was kind of surprised how Megan, the Duchess of Sussex, is not that in it that much. She slowly is in and out, but she's not a complete main character. She's just in and out as far as...
This is Megan Markle, former royal family member. Right? Has she done anything else other than Suits, or does she do Suits and then just marry Harry, right?
You sound like someone that doesn't follow them day to day.
No, I don't.
Neither do I. But yeah, as far as if I look at her IMDb, I don't really see that she... Well, yeah, she has that she was in Suits. That was the majority she was in. She was in something called A Lot Like Love, and the name of her character is Hot Girl.
Okay, so not on the movie poster.
Ashton Kutcher is stars in it. I don't think she was on the movie poster. And then she plays somebody named Jamie in Horrible Bosses.
Okay.
11, and then Remember Me, she played a character named Megan. That was from 2010.
Horrible Bosses was a pretty good comedy. So hold on. Why are you watching Suits? The show is like 10 years old, I think.
Well, it was one of those things where let me see this. It was featured that was new on Netflix. There's probably a reason why it was on USA Network for 8+ seasons. And then I saw why. And I've been watching it almost halfway through the first season.
Okay, good. What do you think?
Yes, it's very easy to go through each episode because they're under about, it's regular broadcast at regular cable. So it's like,
without the commercials. Yeah, they kind of breeze by it. Yeah. Pedro?
I haven't been watching much, just the stuff that we'll talk about in a few, so I'll save my comments for that. I will say though, I did start watching Swarm, the Donald Glover show on
Prime
Video that we talked about a little once. I got a little past close to the end of the first episode and didn't really interest me much. So I don't know if I'll give it a chance. At least maybe finish watching the first and second episode, but most of the first episode just was kind of dull and boring to me. It didn't capture me straight off the bat, kind of moving a little slow. So.
It does have a slow start. I would probably give it, go to the end of the second episode. If it doesn't hit the spot, then it's fine. It does. It's a show that gets extremely strange, pretty interesting. I didn't
finish. Yeah, I will, because it's definitely like my cup of tea. So I was hoping to like it. So I'm gonna give it another shot. And I have not watched this, but I plan on watching it. There's also a show on Prime Video called I'm a Virgo.
Oh yeah. You know, actually, Paul recommended I watch that. Paul has been on the show. Have you tried? So you haven't watched it yet?
No, but that's on my to-watch list. Maybe I'll get around to it this week. It just sounds really interesting. I don't remember if I saw the trailer or not, but just the description is crazy. And I'll read it to you right now. It says, I'm a Virgo is a darkly comedic, fantastical coming-of-age joyride about Cootie, a 13-foot-tall black man in Oakland, California. Having grown up hidden away, passing time on a diet of comic books and TV shows, he escapes to experience the beauty and contradictions of the real world. He forms friendships, finds love, navigates awkward situations, and encounters his idol, the real-life superhero named The Hero.
It's like pretty fantastical, right? Like fish out of water.
Yeah. It looks very colorful and like, it just looks very trippy. And yeah, I believe it's the same person who did Sorry to Bother You.
I was just talking about that movie with someone today. It's a weird movie. The ending kind of fell apart for me there.
That movie was quite interesting. I thought I actually enjoyed it, even though it was quite odd, but I thought it was funny. It was an interesting cast.
It fits into that whole genre of like where like Atlanta and Swarm and these shows are going, where you know it mixes up some sci-fi elements, some fantasy, and kind of brings it into like a sort of like urban setting. So
yeah, watch it. I'm curious to get your take on it. I liked it, but the ending kind of I don't know. We'll leave it there. I'll let you sort of check it out for yourself.
Yes, it was. It turned for interesting.
Hard turn.
I'm not gonna.
Okay,
specifically just about it.
Just gonna have one get a chance.
I also watched the Wham Doc, that's on Netflix, that shows archival interviews and footage, of the the two members, Jordan Andrew, which we know George Michael, when the group was around between the 70s to the 80s. And it was quite interesting because I forgot what songs that they've had. Don't ask me what the titles are. Don't put me on the spot.
Yeah.
When you hear the songs, you go, wow, they had that song, that song, and that song, and that song. And they really weren't around for that long. They like reached stardom within 2 to 3 years. And even though, yes, they were sort of like a pop rock group, but George Michael was really involved in the way he was portrayed in the documentary. He was really involved in developing of all the songs.
They had
went to a solo career
last Christmas, right? That's theirs. Pretty sure that's
yes, it is. I think it is.
Yeah, that's probably the only one I know. I'm sure if I hear, like you said, if you hear them, you probably recognize the music. Well, Last Christmas has now become a Christmas.
That was mad.
Last Christmas was original.
Wow. Yeah, Twin. Remember the music video? They're like at a ski resort and he's trying to kick into the ski.
I've never seen the music video. I always thought it was like Kenny G or someone.
I don't think Kenny G's. I think he's a. Kenny G's a instrumentalist. We got a lot to talk about in the main conversation. I want to start off quickly just with Pedro. You recommended that we watch the Gladiator docuseries on Netflix, which was it was called what again?
That was actually Scott that recommended it. I don't know if it was a full recommendation, Scott, or you just mentioned that the show. You just sent us the trailer and made us aware that the show, that the series was out.
Well, because I was referring to one of our previous episodes that I watched the 30 for 30.
Yes, that's what happened. Yeah. So there was another documentary about it recently, and then when this came out, it was like, oh wait, Netflix. You know how Netflix always like.
These are two different documentaries. Is that?
Yeah.
They're two. The 30 for 30 ESPN focuses on the creator. This other one on Netflix is more revolving around the creatives involved and also many of the gladiators showing their perspective on what it was like through the years of the being part of the series.
Yeah. So American Gladiators was a show from the late 80s. Early 90s, I think it ran for seven seasons, if I remember correctly. And I think it was, primetime Saturday night? I don't remember when it was on. I used to watch it Saturday afternoons, but I'm pretty sure that was the reruns. They used to have two episodes back to back.
It was syndicated, so it was probably on a different time than ever.
That's how I saw it. I watched it, like, weekday mornings on, like, USA.
It was in USA, I think, yeah. Which at the time,
I guess by then network. By then the show had probably ended and they had it, you know, they're just running reruns in the morning.
No, it went until, I think the show, if I remember correctly, they went until 97. And I think it started in 89. I don't remember exactly, but so we watched I only watched the Netflix series. I think it was a 5-episode series. I liked the show growing up as a kid. I at the time, you know, as the show tell you, like, there'd never been anything like that on TV. It was also a time that coincided with, like, the rise of cable TV. And TV was just getting more, like, on a different level in terms of entertainment and action, like, especially following wrestling and stuff like that. But, yeah, I thought the series was good. It was great hearing from the gladiators themselves, talking about their experience, a lot of them being professional athletes prior to joining the gladiators, and some of them even having to switch careers to gladiator because of an injury here or there that sort of derailed their professional career elsewhere. The more interesting aspect for me was talking to the director of the series and how he sort of directed the show in a way that would be far more entertainment for viewers, and like action-packed TV with the helmet cams and the traditional camera guys, like, right in the middle of the action. He was also kind of like a funny pervert, and he just trying to, like, bang all the gladiator females, apparently. He claims to have had a relationship with one of them, but she denied that.
Yeah, I like that they interviewed a lot of different people involved with the show. I think one of them was one of the producers also was being interviewed on top of all the gladiators. So it was cool to hear the perspective from all those different people.
They also talked to many consultants about the way the show evolved from when it started from pilot, and then how in the second or third season they evolved.
That's when this guy came in, I think, right? That's when this producer guy came in. The first two seasons, they would film, like, the whole show in, like, one arena in like, 1 or 2 days, and people were getting hurt.
They would film the whole season, I think they said, right? Or a lot of episodes.
Yeah, like, the whole season. And there was a lot of injuries. The games were kind of boring and just not really well thought out, or they would, you know, come up with these games in their heads, and then the execution just wasn't really fulfilling in the same way that it was envisioned. So they brought this producer on, and then I think starting season three with the producer and the director, the show just took off.
Yeah, it's crazy to hear that that was the first show like that. You know, like now we have so many shows like Wipeout and whatever these shows yeah. are with contestants like trying to beat these obstacles. But I don't know if there's still any shows around where it's like contestants versus like pro athletes and stuff. But that was definitely the first one.
No, there's not, because I don't think any professional athlete would ever exert themselves to such yeah. a situation, because they would pretty much, their agent would probably go, are you out of your mind?
Yeah.
The name of it is Muscles and Mayhem, an unauthorized story of American Gladiators, just so people, if they want to find it.
I thought five episodes is overdoing it. They could have probably told the story in three.
Yeah. Or just what? Or just
I noticed a lot. I think it was like the second half of episode one and carrying over to episode two, they just kind of like reran the same stories.
Did they not
subject matter over
the steroid thing? Right? Did they go over right. that twice? I was like, did I fall asleep and just rewind this thing? Yeah, they did
that too much.
Okay.
My secret was is that I watched it on a mobile device, and the nice part about watching on a mobile device, which hopefully Netflix will figure this out.
Scorsese's gone over in his grave.
Well, all right, this is no Scorsese we're talking. This is not Scorsese doc stuff. Yeah. I wouldn't do that to the Rolling Stone doc, because I would not want to increase the speed of the music. But with this, I increased the speed.
1.5.
No, 1.25. So then, yes, a 45-minute episode would turn into maybe being like 25 minutes, 30. So it took less time to watch it. So, yes, it was like watching three episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the steroid subject matter expanded across two episodes, and a lot of the shots and sound bites were repeats. So I don't know what went wrong there. Maybe it was an overview in the post process, but
and the animation, enjoying the animation of an action fights scene, they were enraged
in a car steroids. Scene
they didn't need to play that out and show them in a diner. I could have heard that for like a 5-second soundbite and then moved on.
Yeah, I would really recommend it. Scott, did you watch 30 for 30? Is that a better series for this?
I would say I would compare it to watching the Staircase documentary and then watching Staircase show on HBO, because you get two different perspectives.
Sure.
I would say both are both documentaries, unlike the Staircase, where one was a dramatized TV series and one was a dramatized documentary. It tells two different perspectives, so you get it from both, two different sides. If you can, watch the 30 for 30 first, because you get the perspective from the creator, who thinks he is the sole creator, who has a big ego. And then you watch this, the Netflix one, and then you get it from the perspective of the people that were part of putting the show together versus okay. the creator, who thinks he did everything himself.
Okay, next, I want to talk about The Jewel Thief. Scott, I'm glad you took time to watch it, because this, and Pedro, I'm glad you mention it, because it's on Hulu, and Hulu is not a platform that I often just scroll through just because it's just bad. So the Jewel Thief follows the story of, what was the guy's name? Gerald Blanchard?
Well, it depends on which name you're going to refer him to.
He had over 20 aliases.
He had all his aliases. Are we going to use his real name or one of his aliases?
That's true. He had countless aliases. And this guy, he was from, I think, Winnipeg, Connecticut. He basically started off as like a small-time thief as a teenager. And then
Winnipeg, Canada.
He starts off as a small-time thief, robbing Radio Shacks, and then onto much, much, much bigger things with international crime organizations. So
I don't think he's the reason why Radio Shack business. I just think they got stuck in
the timeline coincides a little bit. So I think when he was 16, he cleaned one out completely. He completely cleaned out an entire Radio Shack store.
As a teenager, on Easter Sunday, he actually cleared an entire Radio Shack store he claims that they disconnected the alarm. They took everything out with a mantra.
Here's what makes this documentary. I know there's countless documentaries, especially like crime documentaries and things like that, but this one stands out because there is some dramatization in the storytelling, but much of it is original footage because this guy recorded thousands of hours worth of videotape. He recorded everything he did. He recorded from the crime scene. And he recorded himself like actually stealing everything.
That's one of the things that drew me in because it turns out that I think I saw it on the day it premiered on July 13th. And I just stumbled on this. I was, it was just late. It was late night. It was like probably past 11 o'clock. I was like, I had just finished watching something else. I think it just popped up on the Hulu main page for me. And the trailer started just auto-playing. And it caught my attention because I'm seeing like this footage that, you know, it's like grainy VHS footage. So you could tell it's like old footage of like this really nerdy looking 80s looking kid, just with like tons of money and electronics and like posing in these photos and these videos like rappers at the time would. I'm just like, what the hell is this? Is this?
It's not suspicious that a 16-year-old has a mortgage and buys a house for himself. That's not suspicious at all.
So this trailer auto playing just caught my attention. I didn't know about this at all, and that's what led me to watch it. And at first, as I'm watching it, I didn't know anything going in. So I'm thinking like, is this a mockumentary or is this real? And then I start like doubting myself. I'm like, wait, maybe this is just like footage that they threw filters on and post and like made it look like old 80s stuff, and these guys are actors. Because it's just unbelievable, like his story starting off from like a small time crook, just like shoplifting to going on to steal his biggest heist,
royal jewelry,
crown jewel, this crown jewel from Austria, and it sort of had like that avalanche effect that some of these true crime documentaries have, where you just like the story keeps getting crazier and crazier as you're watching it. And that's the type of stuff, especially in this genre, that just keeps me glued. And it was just like so unbelievable, some of the stuff he pulled off, that throughout the whole movie, even up until the end, I kept doubting myself. I'm like, wait, maybe this is a mockumentary. Maybe they're just making this up and like really edited it really well and everything. I even like, you know, had to look it up at the end to prove that it was real. I still have doubts. Like, I don't know what's real or not.
Yeah, 2 points there. So just to speak a little bit more on, you know, some of the crazy stuff that he pulled off. He was also like, he was incredibly smart and a brilliant escape artist. So there's in one part, he gets arrested and he escapes from the police car and steals the police car. Another one, he gets arrested and he's in police custody and they leave the room. They leave him alone in the room and he hides in the ceiling until they give up searching for him. And then he kind of comes out of the crawl space and escapes. And in terms of like being a little bit hard to believe, that another great thing that this documentary has going for itself is that it has Blanchard as the main character telling the story. But then it also has the police involved who were trailing him for years. And it has his accomplices, a couple of old accomplices. It has friends from high school. It has the DA on the case. So there's, you know, they're telling the stories at the same time. Even the cops who he humiliated, you know, are there talking about how they're like, oh crap, when he escaped there, he was worried about losing his job and all this stuff. It just has a lot going for it that you don't see in other documentaries, you know, not just the footage, but everyone sort of corroborating the same story. And then this guy, he's out now. He was busted, but he's out now.
So I think what was unique to this doc is that it wasn't about what happened afterwards. It was about what happened when it happened. Mm-hmm. They didn't focus on the court cases, his lawyer, nothing about that. It's just they were focusing on what he accomplished. And I think all the people that they interviewed, whether it was the police, the investigators, they all admired what he did because they couldn't believe what he was able to accomplish by looking at him. It's like, this is the person, and he was so smart that he outdid, you know, the banks, stores, and he was able to find these loopholes in order to steal
in the systems
and get away with it up to a certain point with the systems that were already in place. How did he steal from a bank without the bank knowing that he was looking into how they do things and was able to successfully steal from them a huge amount of money? And he's one or two, you know, one person or another person, and he was able to accomplish it. But it was always a moment and something he did that gave it away. He was able to get caught.
He approached the art of stealing like completely from a different perspective and angle than like any other thief, jewel thief, or bank robber ever. That's what was so enticing about this and his story, and that even enticed the police and the detectives, because they have police, you know, that caught him when he was 15 shoplifting, all the way to the detectives that like were doing this huge Interpol investigation for the crown jewel. So like,
yeah,
you know, they have interviews, and the story is being told by these cops that like have seen every type of crime he's done.
And there's a scene where at one point, you know, he basically starts off shoplifting, and then he gets into electronics where he prints receipts and then returns the electronics for cash, and he builds a fortune that way. And then he goes into robbing banks and getting into banks, and eventually he gets into, you know, crime on an international level, at which point I think Interpol is looking for him, and they have his phones bugged. And at one point his boss calls him, and he's like, hey, I need you to go down to the police station because one of our partners has been arrested. And he's like, I'm actually in the vent right now scouting this bank, so I can't leave. Yeah. He's literally like in the vent, just sitting there like scouting out security flaws.
He had no filter, like with all the footage he took of all this stuff and the phone calls, how he would just yap away on the phone. Like he really didn't care, but you know, his plans and his execution was so good that, you know, he could have never been caught. But that's why he was so free to record this stuff and talk about it on the phone, because it's like, well, he might never get caught because he's that good. Who plans on robbing a bank before the bank is even built?
Yeah, no, it turned out it was the smartest thing. He robs a jewel, precious jewel in Austria. And that, we never really learned how he did it. There's a couple of theories and a couple of newspaper stories, but he never really he never reveals that secret. That was a bit open-ended, but they swear the security was, you know, so tight it would be impossible for him to steal. So he basically swaps this piece of jewelry, and he replaces it with the one from the gift shop, and they didn't notice it for like 8 days. At which point he was well gone by then.
They bring up the theory that he parachuted from a plane or helicopter onto the museum and climbed down and snuck in through the window. But
yep,
they bring it up, but I think he refutes that, or the police, the Austrian police or something, Interpol refutes it.
Yeah, they refute it.
And I think they even throw in the theory that he was just in there as a tourist, like taking pictures, and just literally like swiped it and replaced it right there while like everyone was there.
Yeah.
Looking at it and stuff.
You know, his mom makes a point of saying like he never stole from people he knew. I don't want to say it was like a victimless crime. Like he never hurt anybody. He never really put anyone in danger. He kind of just stole from banks, corporations, and things like that. So just not to justify anything, but it is of note, I think, to mention that he didn't, you know, rob people at gunpoint or anything. He just kind of in and out unnoticed.
It was like his own type of sport that he was doing. That was what he was doing, challenge himself.
Yeah, over and over. And I think the DA even says, you know, ultimately, like, he got to live out his fantasy. He got to live out his dreams because he did this his entire life. And the big question at the end is, like, is this guy going to, you know, go on to continue to steal and do things like that? One of the cops was like, I don't know what he's doing, but right now, but it's not legal.
Yeah, he's up to something.
Let's move on to Linoleum. I always need to take a pause before I say the name of this because it's one of those titles that just doesn't quite roll off the tongue immediately. Linoleum is also on Hulu. It stars Jim Gaffigan. Jim Gaffigan, that's how I say his name, right? And not really a comedic role, but he actually plays two characters. He plays Kent and Cameron, the lead. And it's basically a movie about a middle-aged man who's having a bit of a midlife crisis because he feels like his life's goals have been unfulfilled. He has a midnight children's show about space, and it's an educational show about space travel and science, which gets canceled, or he loses the host job, I would say. And his life begins to spiral. A spacecraft crash lands on his backyard, and he is inspired to sort of put it together and fly into space. That's kind of the gist of it. What did you guys think of Linoleum?
Did you notice that two of his Jim Gaffigan's sons were actually, you probably didn't see this.
Yes, they were.
Yeah, maybe two of his sons were in.
Yes.
Yep. I saw in the credits. I didn't know he. So, okay, but what did you guys just think of the film just before we get into the little nitty gritty stuff?
I was confused.
Yeah.
Confused. Well, go ahead. I'll let you go into why, what, if you were confused as well. But I was like, for all really, it was like so, quite a few flashbacks where maybe go, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Pedro, are you confused?
I thought it was pretty easy to follow up until that final act when the big reveals and everything start happening. It took me a while to understand it. But I didn't think it was that difficult to follow or comprehend at the end. I did think that the movie after like the first 40 minutes or so just moved really slow up until that final act. So
I agree.
Kind of started boring me a little. I thought they could have started doing more of the reveal little by little earlier on in the movie to keep me interested the whole time. But you know, once the reveals start happening towards the end, you know, it's like that's the big payoff.
Yeah, so basically the movie does get a little strange, but I think in a good way. It just doesn't really add up in the end. That was my opinion. I wasn't really ever bored until the end. That there was a scene when Nora, his daughter's character, and the neighbor, their story felt a little like it wasn't completely fleshed out, and it doesn't really pay off at the end, and you probably spend a little too much time with them and it doesn't really go anywhere. But it opens pretty strong because within the first 10 minutes a Corvette falls out of the sky, and there's a guy in there that looks just like our main character. And then the next day, that guy takes our main character's job in this children's science show. This guy turns out to be a former astronaut who's a Nobel Peace Prize winner. He also ends up moving next door to him. So it right away, you're like, what's going on here? And then that sort of question mark in your head, I guess, just gets bigger and bigger, especially when you start seeing the old lady in some of the shots and questioning who she is.
Yeah.
So there's like a big twist at the end, spoilers. The big twist is that he's the old man the whole time, and he's dealing with Alzheimer's and his memories going back and forth, jumping through. That's why we're seeing all of these characters. And I kind of realized that when the neighbor kid, whose name I can't remember, they're both in the backyard, and he's like, I don't know, I kind of want to build this spaceship, but I can't. He's like, just do it. And he's like, well, it's not that simple. Right there, because there's a lot of similar parallel language in the movie. Just do it, or it's not that simple, is one of the phrases that comes up a lot. The idea of doing something fantastic comes up a lot. And the idea of being rational versus irrational comes up a lot between different characters. So that made me kind of think like these are all the same person. And I didn't realize, I thought the woman might be like his mom. I was like, it's either the mom or it's the wife. because they do mention the mom not being around growing up. And then every other character sort of fits into that role as well. Also, the characters all kind of dress alike. They wear like the red or the purple sweater. So I was like, okay, that's him from an earlier time, and that the old man is him as well. But the reality is that the old man is actually all of them. But I just felt like at the end, it's just like way over sentimental. And then they went back and showed shots from earlier in the film, kind of like re-explaining. Like, I'm like, you don't have to really say that. I understand what I just saw, and it makes sense. So for them to try to reiterate that, I didn't really need it.
It allowed to the audience to decide how to feel. It's like, all right, here it is. What you want to be the sentiment of feeling.
It wasn't a bad movie at all. It just, I actually liked Jim Gaffigan in this role. I don't really know, but I'm left to the with this comedy, but I thought he did a really good job here. The whole midlife crisis was good. I think it did a good job of looking at regrets and looking at aspirations. You know, they talk a lot about like, what were our dreams or ambitions when we were younger? And have we fulfilled those? You know, he tells his daughter like, you can be anything you want. So that kind of message is, I guess, resonated with me. And I like that. It just ultimately didn't really get back to any of that. Or maybe it did, I don't know. What did you guys think of that?
Yeah, no, I agree. I like the message. I like the message, like you just said. I thought the big payoff at the end was cool looking back at it. You're actually watching this whole movie is actually a warped memory of this old man that has Alzheimer's, and he's just remembering things as different people. To me, I'll keep saying it, the big payoff at the end was worth it.
You just thought it dragged to get there?
It was enjoyable along the way. You know, they presented these little mysteries in the beginning, like, did this have this car fall out of the sky? This mysterious woman that keeps showing up in shots.
Yeah,
you know, and I watch it, and I want to know these things, and they present other little like clues here and there, like you mentioned, the purple and red is a big like color, scheme that they always show. Sometimes it shows up in sweaters, sometimes it shows up in the background, the foreground.
Yeah,
kind of like wanted to know what that was about. I was not expecting that ending. I think the thing with the old lady, at some point I kind of threw out a guess and thought, oh, maybe this is his wife later on or something.
Yeah.
It's the only person. Everything else, I was, yeah. Well, I also at one point thought it was his daughter also.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Later on. But I wasn't even close to guessing what the ending was, and that it was this old man with Alzheimer's, because I just thought it was part of the story, you know, like he's visiting his dad who has like dementia or whatever.
Yeah, but things get weird when he visits his dad, as if like he thinks
that something didn't feel right about those.
Yeah, because the doctor is supposed to be talking about his dad, but he's speaking directly to him, so it's a little bit foggy coded language. Yeah, so that's when I was like, oh, I see.
Yes, and there was a scene where he's with the doctor, and they kind of cut from him to the doctor, and then when they cut back to him, it's the old man.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what you're talking about, that he's talking face-to-face to him, to his dad, but he's actually talking face-to-face to him.
Did you guys also notice, so at the end it's revealed that you know, he has a son and a daughter, but the son, you know, at the end you find out, like, when he's like, hey, where's Sam? Who's the kid? I couldn't even remember. And the wife tells him,
he was born there.
Yeah, he was still born, you know, he passed away, he was never there. So in the movie, throughout the film, Sam, he never says anything. And he only it's kind of like the sixth sense, like he only talks to the main character. He never talks to the sister, never talks to the mom. I thought that was dope. I didn't know.
I don't think
that
he ever talked. I don't think he ever talked in the movie at all. I think he talks to the son, but I don't think the son ever talks. And that's noticeable right away, like in the from the beginning of the movie. You're like, okay, something's up. This kid isn't talking.
You're just there.
Yeah, maybe he's mute. I thought maybe he was just mute or handicapped, and they would explain it later on.
This movie was fairly small. It only made a little over $100,000. So I would say it was a small film when it was released. But it got quite a few nominations in the rest of film festivals. I was on YouTube and I saw Jim Gaffigan was promoting it on Stephen Colbert, Late Show with Stephen Colbert, during the circuit, as one would normally do.
We got a Tony Shalhoub sighting after seeing him in Flaming Hot last week. He popped up again.
Yes.
Yes, I saw that.
I did have a couple of questions. Just like, first of all, like, he had a TV show, a children's TV show at midnight. That never really made sense to me. If you want like the horrible time slot for a kid's TV show, it's either like the 1 o'clock or like the 6 a.m. slot, but a midnight slot, I don't know what kids are up watching TV shows.
I don't know what channel would, maybe in this fictitious world, I guess there are children that like to watch a science show. I don't even know if the show
at midnight
was even for children. You know, Bill Nye
the Science Guy. No, it was a kid show.
It was a Bill Nye type show that kind of like, I don't know, I guess the producers or the network just buried into the ground and just said, let's throw it on at midnight.
And then why did Aaron, the wife, want a divorce? That was never really put out there, why she wanted to get a divorce. I never really understood that.
It did not seem like it was explained.
No, right? And their relationship?
Yeah, they're...
Okay.
When they bring it up in that one scene, he kind of like... I think he goes to sleep in another room in like his little man cave.
Yeah.
And then like... It's like that ever happened. She like goes and sleeps with him on the same bed or something. And they like forget about it. Unless there was an answer to that that we all missed, that was kind of unnecessary to throw that in.
It didn't really create any conflict within the relationship. I don't know. I don't really get the point of that. And then something else that was weird to me was when Nora was hanging out with the kid at the train tracks, he just was like, by the way, I like to wear women's underwear. And she was like, cool. And I was like, wait, what? Why did this just get thrown out here? I have no idea. And then I thought it was just...
anecdote.
Yeah, I thought it was just like a small, insignificant thing. I thought it was very strange. But it does come back in like the next scene where like some bully
gets picked on
and she takes a photo of it. But again, that leads to nothing. So I just thought that was strange.
I believe, if I'm correct, I believe the director writer, Colin West, I believe this is his first feature film.
Oh, so
props to him. Props to him for directing this little nice little indie movie and, you know, getting some good writing in there in a time where we're not getting good writing in a lot of things. I'm looking forward to seeing what else this director and writer, Colin West, will do after this, or if a studio will give him a bigger budget to do something bigger.
But did you ever see, not to change the subject, but have you ever watched the show Beakman's World from 1992?
Yes, that was a great show. I forgot about that. That was like another Bill Nye type show, right? But a little
quirkier
or something.
Oh, as the description says, a zany scientist explains science and nature to kids. And yes, it was quite zany, I must say.
Beakman's World is very similar to Jim Gaffigan's character. He's not as like wacky or oddballish, but yeah. Yeah, check it out. Linoleum on Netflix, starring Jim Gaffigan. Linoleum on Hulu. All right, guys, we'll leave it there this week. Come back to the pod, subscribe, give us the 5 stars, and we'll see you next time. Later.